Something simpler. I think your answers were better than mine. But just to introduce us to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is a prior step to developing love for Krishna and bringing us to Vrindavan. And this is why Srila Prabhupada carried the first canto of the Bhagavatam with him, because he wanted to introduce everyone to Krishna. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that amazingly enough, not only for the Westerners, but really for most of those even born in India, that the all-powerful, unlimited, all-pervading, Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. A person. What does it mean to you that someone's a person? Raise your hand. It's an interesting one. Yes. He responds. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Yeah, a person is very personal. As opposed to a person being an impersonal. But Krishna is both personal and impersonal, which is also interesting. Yeah. Okay. We'll call on one person at a time. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He has feelings and emotions. And what else? Wait, what else? He has qualities. Anyone else like to say what is? Raise your hand if you're not a person. Obviously. Only one. Oh, wait a second. Non-persons cannot speak. Were you going to say that you weren't a person? Were you? No. Okay. Just kidding. Yeah. What did you want to say, Paul? Yeah, you, the person. His name and form and qualities and characteristics and even moods. The absolute truth is ultimately a person. And because he's a person, we can have a relationship with him. And not only can we have a relationship with him, we do have a relationship with him. And the expansion of our relationship with him is the purpose of our life. And it will bring the satisfaction that every soul longs for. Now, in this chapter, what did Krishna do in the last chapter? Or say, or do? Does anyone remember? In yesterday's class, we'll call it that. Yes. What did he say to Narada Muni? Before that, he glorified Narada Muni and then expressed his concern for the Pandavas. And what else did he do? Right at the very end of the chapter. He asked Uddhava, he glorified Narada Muni. He asked Uddhava, now what is he going to do in this next chapter, and Krishna willing, we shall cover the 71st chapter. Not cover it, but we shall speak on the 71st chapter today. What will he do? Just watch what he will do, or hear what he will do. And you'll be very surprised. And perhaps at the end of the class, if I remember, I'll ask you, what did Krishna do in this? But actually, I'll give you a hint. To find out about Krishna, there are two things described in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Samatha Sindhu, in an understanding rasa. There's the lambana and the two parts of a lambana. Does anyone know the two parts of a lambana? There's vishaya and ashraya. To understand the object of our search, the object of our life, the object of bhakti, of Krishna consciousness, is to understand the visha, and the visha is Krishna. He is the object. So when we say visha chadiya, as our great acharya is saying, that means the object, giving up the object of sense gratification. But this is something quite different, the object of devotion. Now how do we, where does the love for the object of devotion, Krishna, where does it rest? It rests in the ashraya, the shelter of that, of the shelter of love, where love rests. So if we want to actually understand, one of the main ways we can understand Krishna is watch very carefully, even more than listen. In this chapter especially, just watch his relationship, or watch those who actually love him, and how they experience Krishna. Because again, the Bhagavatam wants to introduce us to Krishna. The Bhagavatam wants us to learn to love Krishna, to become attracted to Krishna, to desire to be in relationship with him. Because now Krishna Mule say Jiva and Ade Bahimok, we turn our back on Krishna. The Bhagavatam wants to inspire us to turn towards Krishna. And look at the qualities that Krishna has exhibited, as we shall find out, that so much captivate those who love him, that when they see him, oh, I'm not going to tell you what happens, but soon you shall hear. But before, how did the last chapter of the last class end, the 70th chapter? Raise your hand, please. How did it end? Someone said it before. Yes, madam. And then, Krishna became perplexed. Now, what shall I do? No, I was just saying that Krishna became perplexed, and then at the end he asked Uddhav, yes, you are like the eye of the Yadav dynasty, the eye that sees properly, because you have no motive other than to do what's best for us. So therefore, I can trust what you say, and not only do I trust what you say, I will follow what you say. We will follow what you say, what you advise. So now, Uddhav begins to speak. He took the order of Krishna and he placed it upon his head with great devotion. And having, we'll go to our paper here, Srila Sukadev Goswami is narrating. Having heard the statements of Devarshi Narada and understanding the opinions of both the assembly, and what was the opinion of the assembly, that Jarasandha should be killed, the assembly of warrior Yadus, and also, so understanding what Narada said, and understanding what the assembly wanted, but also understanding what Lord Krishna, the great mind, wanted, that Uddhava, who was great-minded, he began to speak, and he said, it was very interesting, how he starts. He says, O Lord, sage advised, that means as Narada said, you should help your cousin fulfill his plan. Who is the cousin? Yudhisthira. You should help your cousin fulfill his plan for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. So what does he say? This is culture. He's saying that what should he first do? Basically, he should help Yudhisthira, your cousin, and you should perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. First, you should do that. And the Sanskrit also follows that. The first thing you should do is assist your cousin. And you should also protect the kings who are begging for your shelter. So in one sense, he's saying you do both. But he starts by saying you should do what Narada has said, and you should help your cousin perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Krishna wanted to do both. But then he says, only one who has conquered all opponents in every direction, this is the conclusion, can perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. O Almighty One, he's speaking directly to Krishna, thus in my opinion, conquering Jarasandha will serve both purposes. So he starts off by saying, you should help your cousin. But the way you should help your cousin is by killing Jarasandha. So he starts in one direction and makes Narada and those who want to please Narada happy, but ends up in the other direction, making everyone happy in that way. You have to do both. But to do both, you have to first kill Jarasandha. He must be killed before the sacrifice can be performed. So by this decision, he says, there will be great gain for us, because us meaning the others, because Krishna has said that you will be speaking, you will be speaking on behalf of the benefit of the others. So there will be great gain for the others, and you will save the kings who are imprisoned. Thus, Govinda, you will be glorified. So everything will be served, and then when everyone's interests are served, then everyone becomes happy. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, not only will this be beneficial for the kings and the Pandavas, but for us as well. By defeating Jarasandha, we will gain, the Yadavas will gain, since our powerful enemy will have died. And then also, Krishna, by freeing the kings, you will become famous. You will gain fame. And that, when you become famous, then we also become at gain. And looking at the Yadavas, who most of them wanted, because they were warriors, they wanted to fight. They didn't want to go to a sacrifice. They wanted to fight. They wanted to kill Jarasandha. So then, Uddhava, looking at them, by his smile, by his demeanor, by his purity, he satisfied them as well and made them in favor of his suggestion. So the question comes up, well, why can't someone else kill Jarasandha? Why do we have to do that? Why does that have to be done? So Uddhava then reveals a plan. He says, this is in the fifth verse, the invincible king Jarasandha, invincible means no one can defeat him, is as strong as 10,000 elephants. Indeed, other powerful warriors cannot defeat him, but only Bhima is equal to him in strength. But there's a problem. Bhima is equal to him in strength, but he has a huge army, 100 Akshohinis, or something like that. Jiva Goswami says, he has a huge army, and therefore, we have to fight with him and have him killed in a match, a single chariot match, and not when he is with his 100 military defenders. John 1, Bhima is equal to him in fighting, then he won't have his armies there. And if we challenge him, and if we just attack, the Yadavas just attack, he'll have his armies and they'll come out. And but before he, even if we defeat him, what would he do with those captives, those kings? He would kill them. So that won't be fulfilling the desire of the kings who have surrendered to Krishna. They will be lost. They will be killed by Jarasandha. So a direct attack won't work. And also, all the wealth that he has will be destroyed if we fight. And that wealth we need in order to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. So it is not a good idea to fight directly, but rather Bhima should fight him. Now, how is that going to be arranged? Uddhava has a plan. Bhima should go to him disguised as a Brahmana, and he should beg charity from him. And thus he will obtain single combat with Jarasandha and Krishna in your presence. And here is a main point Buddha is saying, that Krishna has to be there. In Krishna's presence, Bhima, with no doubt at all, when Krishna is there, he will be able to kill him. So, why is Krishna required to be present when he's not the one who's actually going to do the killing, or not doing the fighting even with Jarasandha? So Uddhava then says that even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva act only as your instruments in cosmic creation and annihilation. The universe, the entire universe, is created by who? By Brahma? Yes, but they're only instruments. And the entire universe is destroyed by Lord Shiva, yes, but he's instrumental in the power of Krishna. So this is, everything is ultimately done by you, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, in your invisible aspect of, as we were speaking about yesterday, time. Time is a very important factor, of course, in our lives, and time is a very important factor in this section of the Bhagavatam. Timing, in one sense, becomes everything. And very often, our timing doesn't agree with Krishna's timing. And we tend to think that our timing is a much better plan than what Krishna has in mind. But this is going to be shown to be not correct. Now, do we trust Krishna's timing more than we trust our timing? The Bhagavatam wants to convince, to increase our trust in Krishna. Because our relationship with Krishna, we have to be attracted to him, yes. But we also have to trust him. To have a relationship with someone that you don't trust is not actually possible. And soon as there's doubts in one's mind about the other person, then the relationship starts to crumble. So along with introducing us to Krishna, the Bhagavatam wants us to have faith in Krishna. Again, watch Krishna's dealings with his devotees as they unfold in today and in the rest of the classes. So, Uddhava says, ultimately, everything that is going on by your power, Krishna. creation of the universe to the creation of the universe. And hidden in that is also the time factor that has placed the kings in the prison of the Jarasandha. Every situation that we are in, Krishna is involved in. Do you believe that? Well, there's so many people I hear sort of saying yes. And inside some of us may be saying, I'm not quite sure. I trust Krishna in certain circumstances, but maybe not in everyone. How about at the time when we're leaving this world, at the time of death, are we going to be able to trust Krishna then? Well, that's the test on Devanayana Smriti. And what is life for? Life is for developing our relationship with Krishna to the degree that we trust Krishna and take full shelter of him. At the time to leave this world, at this day, Manasteyam, when it's time to leave this world, we want to leave it holding on to the lotus feet of Krishna. And the difficulties in life are really, on one level, we could say they're our karma, and also the good things in our life, we could say they're our karma. Or we could say that they're our bad karma, or good karma, or just our fate, or it's just happened, or I wish it didn't happen, and I try to push this away and pull this closer to me. But do we see Krishna in them? The Bhagavatam wants to tell us that we should see Krishna. And this will be gradually told as the pastime unfolds. And then, after putting forward that point, that Krishna is the one doing everything, ultimately, and everyone else is just the instrumental cause, then Uddhava says something very mysterious. And he says it in according to our acharyas in the Sanskrit, and also it comes out in the English too, and very difficult to understand phraseology and language. He says, in their homes, explaining why, another reason why Krishna will should kill Jarasandha. In their homes, the godly wives of the imprisoned kings, they sing of your noble deeds. They sing about how you will kill their husband's enemy and how you will deliver them. The gopis also sing your glories, how you killed the enemy of the elephant king, Gajendra, the enemy of Sita, the daughter of Janaka, Sita, the daughter of Janaka, and the enemies of your own parents as well, meaning the Yadavas, meaning and the enemies of Vasudeva and Devaki, meaning Kamsa. So also do the sages who have obtained your shelter glorify you, as do we ourselves. Now, there are three persons mentioned, types of persons, categories of persons mentioned here who glorify Krishna. First, there's the wives of the imprisoned kings. They're singing about your noble deeds. The gopis sing your glories. And what are the glories? How you killed the enemy of the elephant king, Gajendra, the enemy of Sita, the daughter of Janaka, and the enemies of your own parents as well, and also the sages. So it's the sages, the gopis, and the wives of the kings. Now, Prabhupada's translation of this from Krishna book. My dear Lord, when Jarasandha is killed, the queens of all the imprisoned kings will be so joyful at their husbands being released by your mercy that they will all sing your glories, being as pleased as the gopis were when released from the hands of Shankarachuda. All the great sages, the king of the elephants, Gajendra, the goddess of fortune, Sita, and even your father and mother were all delivered by your causeless mercy. We also have been thus delivered, and we also always sing the transcendental glories of your activities. Now, on one part of the verse, I'm going to read some comments. This is the verse. The godly wives of the imprisoned king sing of your noble deeds, about how you will kill their husband's enemy and deliver them. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is telling about the devotion of the wives of the imprisoned kings that Uddhava sings. So there's a bit of reading of the commentaries here, but it's, I found it very interesting. But just hearing, reading, sometimes one has to focus very carefully. The wives of the imprisoned kings in their homes, they sing of your splendid activities. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. They sing of your splendid activities when doing their jobs, such as taking care of their children. They sing about your future killing of Jarasandha and freeing of their husbands, having already been informed of this by the omniscient, all-knowing sages. They tell their children that the Lord protects his devotees. They say, O child, do not cry. Krishna, after killing Jarasandha, will free your father. So that's what how Vishwanath comments on how the wives are acting, and how they are so pious, and how Krishna should kill Jarasandha. With his words, Uddhava also gives hope to the sages who have obtained Krishna's shelter. Just as the wives and gopis sing about you, again, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, the sages who have surrendered to you, the self-satisfied devotees, and we, your servant devotees, also sing, having relished your friendship. You killed the crocodile, the enemy of the king of elephants, and liberated the elephant. You killed Ravan, the enemy of Sita, and Kamsa, the enemy of your parents. You thus freed Sita and your parents, all fellow sages, all tapasis. This is how the sages will become satisfied. Do not lament. Just as he, Krishna, delivered Gajendra from the crocodile, or Sita from Ravana, or Vasudeva and Devaki from Kamsa, he will also deliver us from the material bondage, and award us service to him. So in this way, Uddhava is encouraging the sages also. Now the third group of persons that he wants to encourage, what he wants to Krishna to understand, because he's telling Krishna that you should give mercy to the wives. And remember, Krishna has already promised Uddhava that I will do whatever you say. And Uddhava, in a carefully worded statement that's somewhat hard to understand, he's giving Krishna some advice what to do. And Krishna has already promised to do what Uddhava says. And Uddhava is very clever, and he's speaking somewhat indirectly, but very deeply. Oh, Krishna, you should kill Jarasandha. You should kill Jarasandha and liberate the queen, the kings, so these wives of the kings, who are your devotees, will be freed from their anxiety, and the children will also be free. But Krishna, not only you should do it for that reason, kill Jarasandha, you should give the tapasvis, the devotees who have dedicated their lives to not to sense gratification like ordinary people do, but have dedicated their lives to becoming released from the material energy and dedicated their lives to your service. You should give them the hope that you will also rescue them from the material world and award them your service. So in this way, you save the kings who have begged you for shelter, and that will give the tapasvis hope, more hope. It will increase their hope that one day they will also attain your service. persons mentioned in the verse, they have been rescued from death or saved from a difficult situation. And Uddhava wants to indirectly tell Krishna. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says, and Jiva Goswami will say something quite similar. He wants to tell Krishna that you should go to Vrindavan and rescue the devotees from their separation from you. And the only way you can do that is going to Vrindavan. So, the gopis sing your glories. This is the verse. How you killed the enemy of the elephant king, the Jandra, the enemy of Sita, the daughter of Janaka, and the enemies of your own parents as well. And Vishwanath says, just as the gopis console themselves by singing about the killing of Shankarachuda and how Krishna rescued them from Shankarachuda during the holy ceremony, and having been the gopis sing about the killing of Shankarachuda and having been liberated from his confinement, the wives of the king speak to each other as follows. O friend, be calm. Do not give up your lives by crying endlessly. That ocean of mercy who protected the gopis from the devouring tiger called Shankarachuda, he remembers us. Now, this is something that devotees need in their own lives to accept that Krishna, although he is everywhere in everything in a sense, and although he's enjoying with the residents of Vrindavan and the Brajagopikas in Vrindavan, but also he remembers his devotees who are remembering him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks about this in Raghavatma Chandrika. He speaks about Krishna being Mukdata and Savagya. Although he's being bound by Yashoda Maya, and although he's crying, his consciousness is compressed by her love. But yet, at the same time, in his inconceivable consciousness, because we can't understand what it's like being Krishna, and it sounds paradoxical or contradictory rather to us, at the same time his consciousness is mugdata, compressed, he's also savagya. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Raghavatma Chandrika, he says, don't worry. Even though Krishna is mugdata in Vrindavan, his consciousness is compressed by the great love of the residents of Vrindavan, and he thinks of himself as just a little boy or a cowherd boy or a flute player or a dancer, but still he can hear the prayers of the devotees who prayed to him with full-hearted devotion. And this is one of the main messages of these chapters. And we shall hear a little bit more about that very soon. That ocean of mercy who protected the gopis from the devouring tiger called Shankarachuda, he remembers us. And he will protect us from the bite of the snake of time. He will, because it is his energy, time, which brings with it the great calamity of separation from him. Just as these wives are to be protected, Vishnu continues, by your killing of Jarasandha and uniting them with their husbands, because Krishna has been reminded by Uddhava, he's mentioned the gopis, he's brought the gopis into his consciousness by his words in relationship to the queens of the kings who are imprisoned by Jarasandha, but he's brought the word gopis into the consciousness of Krishna. He's done this quite consciously, and therefore just as these wives are to be protected by the killing of Jarasandha and uniting them with their husbands after completing the Rajasuya sacrifice, you should secretly go to Braja and protect the gopis by giving them your company. Then we and others will sing your glories. So taking this opportunity, Uddhava, this is the comment of Vishnu, gave Krishna the above advice that was in his mind. Now, there's more. This is Jiva Goswami's comment. He says that this verse, so indirectly spoken, and that's the way of Braj. Everything is somewhat indirect, not by this kind of glance, but by that kind of glance, out of the sideline glance. This verse indicates Uddhava's increasing anxiety for the gopis, because when he traveled to Vrindavan, he saw the state of consciousness of Nandi and Yashoda. When you've read that 46th chapter of the 10th canto, did you notice that Mother Yashoda doesn't say one word? It's all Uddhava speaking with Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Maharaj is talking about being separate from Krishna. But Mother Yashoda, either she can't speak at all, or she's thinking herself always with Krishna due to the channel that she's opened up due to the separation caused by her love for Krishna. She's thinking, why is Nanda saying that Krishna's not with us? He's right here, always with us. Either that, or she can't speak at all. She couldn't even cook anything for Uddhava. It describes a little indirectly. And then Braj, even today, if you walk around, people will invite you into their house and cook for you. When Uddhava came so far, she was so distraught or so in ecstasy and separation, and all of Braja was in complete separation, and she didn't even offer up something to eat. This is clearly there in the 46th chapter. What to speak of the Braja Gopikas when Srimati Radharani is talking to bumblebees. Mahaprabhu very much appreciates this. It inspires him in his own feelings of separation in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So this verse indicates Uddhava's increasing anxiety for the gopis. Everyone who takes shelter of you, Krishna, should be protected. Beginning from when Uddhava left Braja, but not getting an opportunity until now, Uddhava wanted to remind Krishna of the gopis. So this, he came from Vrindavan in 1947, but a different year. But in the 47th chapter, but this is in the 71st chapter, and Uddhava has just been waiting for an opportunity to say, Krishna, can't you see how the gopis are suffering so much? You must go back to Vrindavan. You must go back. But he can't speak like that to Krishna directly, because he can't tell Krishna what to do. He has his own plans of what to do, but he indirectly suggests. So everyone who takes shelter of you should be protected, beginning from when Uddhava left Braja, but not getting an opportunity until now. Uddhava wanted to remind Krishna of the gopis. He thus scolds Krishna, saying, you are advised by me to protect everyone. Why do you not remember the gopis? Hearing this, the Lord decided in his mind, this is Jiva Goswami, I will go to Braja after the Rajasuya sacrifice is completed and after I have killed Dantavakra. So, Krishna has his way of doing things, and this is very relevant to our own lives, because again, we have our plans on what's best. And do we trust Krishna's plans? Do we trust Krishna's plans to accept our difficulties as Krishna's mercy and see what, or tolerate them at least, seeing that Krishna is so kind? This is advanced consciousness. Tathagata Kampamsa Samitshamano. This is advanced consciousness. And this is what we are being requested to develop. Because this will bring us Jivateo Mukti Padai Sadayama. This will give us, we'll be living in the kingdom of God now. There is one part of one of Prabhupada's purports in the Bhagavad Gita when he says a devotee lives in the mercy of Krishna. What faith! That is what it means to be a devotee. That Krishna's hand, how can I please Krishna in this circumstance, regardless what the circumstance is? What will be pleasing to Krishna? How can I serve him? Because how can one be in that consciousness unless one has such a deep, loving, trusting relationship with Krishna that our desire is to serve him and please him? It's not intellectual. It's not following just because we know we're supposed to love Krishna. We know we're supposed to. The Bhagavatam wants us to develop our relationship with Krishna and hear. And that's done by the hearing process of hearing who Krishna is and the way people love him and why they love him and how he reacts to everything. Watch Krishna closely. So far he hasn't, practically speaking, said anything or done anything. And in this chapter, there's very little he's going to say. He's going to do. But watch what he does very closely. And see if you want to have a relationship with a person who is like this. So Krishna's plan, why hasn't he gone back in one sense to rescue the Vrajagopikas and the residents of Vrindavan from their such difficult circumstance of separation and the pain of that? The ecstatic pain of that? Well, if he were to go back and so many demons were still there, so many powerful persons like Darasandha, who were devoted, sworn enemies of Krishna, if he was in Vrindavan, Krishna didn't want the residents of Vrindavan to have any trouble from them and to be disturbed. So first, who has to be killed? Darasandha, who's so powerful that he's challenging Yudhisthira, practically speaking, to be the sole ruler of the world. And then, when Darasandha is killed, then what can occur? The Rajasuya sacrifice. And because the Rajasuya sacrifice occurs, who is going to be killed? Shishupal. And when Shishupal is killed, then his great friend, Salva, is going to attack Krishna. And then Salva is going to be killed. And because Salva is killed, then his friend, Dandavakra, wanting to cause Krishna so much trouble, he goes specifically to Mathura to fight with Krishna because he knows, I'm in Mathura, so close to Braja. Krishna must come to stop me. He challenges Krishna in that way. So Krishna, after Salva, is killed without even going to take permission from his father or his mother or Ugrasena, as he always does when he leaves Dwarka. He goes right to Mathura. Why doesn't he take permission from them before leaving for Mathura? Because he knows that his mother and father, Vasudeva, Devaki, and Ugrasena, will never give him permission to go so close to Vrindavan. Because they think he'll never come back when he goes to Vrindavan. Because the love of the residents of Vrindavan capture Krishna so tightly, the mood that they love him there, here, here. And here we are in this most holy land. Most holy land that even as mobile as the teachings of the Rath Yatra, as the 82nd chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam teaches us, is that even Radha and Krishna together, does not work in the same way when there is no Vrindavan. So how fortunate are we here to be here? How much should we take advantage of our time when we're in this atmosphere, holy atmosphere? And how should we use our time? We should hear about Krishna. We should glorify Krishna. We should pray to Krishna. We should remember Krishna. We should try to develop our relationship with Krishna, our love for Krishna, as you all said, our loving relationship in service to Krishna. Because love is the motivator for true service, selfless service, and Abhinasita service. And what is the cause of all our material distractions? It is lack of love for Krishna. Really. Krishna Surya Sammaya Haya Andhakar. Darkness dissipates immediately with the advent of light. So Krishna, after killing Dantavakra and his brother, Vidurat, he immediately went back to Vrindavan, as described by our acharyas from the Padma Purana. And Vida Goswami describes this in Gopal Champu. He immediately went back, crossed the Yamuna at Vishwamgat in his chariot after killing Dantavakra. And he took off his crown and put on his peacock feather and took out his flute and made everyone happy. But when the residents of Vrindavan saw him, they kept glancing at his chariot because it brought him, and therefore it could take him. And then Krishna did something very wonderful with his chariot. He put everyone in Vrindavan on his chariot and went back to Vrindavan, which was the same place where they were. Amazingly, of course, because Vrindavan is Vrindavan. So that also means that this Vrindavan, if we had the right consciousness, is that Vrindavan. And the greatest of souls, that is their vision. Do you know that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he took his devotees on parikrama of Vrindavan, he was so respectful that he, because in those days people would only use twigs to brush their teeth, he would not let them cut the twigs of the trees of Vrindavan to brush their teeth, because his mood was everything in Vrindavan is meant solely for Krishna's pleasure. Don't think otherwise. And don't use it otherwise. So it's very weighty, actually. Very weighty. So that, and then Uddhava says, and this is the last thing he's going to say in this sequence. Oh Krishna, because he's speaking to Krishna, the killing, and he's just told Krishna in a very indirect way, something very, very intimate that no one else knows, because no one else has been to Vrindavan and seen the condition of the Brijvasis. Only Balaram, Rohini, and Uddhava have ventured into the land of Vrindavan. Then he says, oh Krishna, the killing of Jarasandha, which is certainly a reaction of his past sins, will bring immense benefit. Indeed, it will make possible the sacrificial ceremony that you desire, the Rajasuya sacrifice. So hidden in that little verse is something that speaks to what the kings were wondering about. The kings were wondering, how is Jarasandha enjoying when he is so sinful? Well, we, who are your devotees, have to suffer, captured by him. person gets away with anything. Time is Krishna. Jarasandha will be killed and they will be freed. They will be freed by Krishna's mercy, and Jarasandha will be killed by Krishna's mercy. He'll actually be liberated by that. But here it's stating directly in answer, remember, is answering directly and yet indirectly, subtly, that yes, this is the law of karma, but for devotees, and we will hear about this really directly, not in today's class, and not in tomorrow's class, and not in the class after the day we don't have a class, but in the final class, we'll hear about how the kings who were suffering were so fortunate, and they got so much mercy from Krishna because because they were very fortunate. They had consciousness that made them fortunate. So Uddhava has said this. He's finished everything he's going to say. Srila Chakravarti Thakur comments about the great gains that will come to the by the killing of Jarasandha, in killing and performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, rescuing the kings, easily killing Sisupal and others with your desire, and also accomplishing what I have just hinted at, that you will be able to see the gopis after all these demons are killed. This sacrifice is approved by you. Is it not? Because in its completion, there'll be the breaking another benefit, which doesn't sound like a benefit externally, but this is one of the reasons why Krishna descended to this world. Because in the completion of the sacrifice, there'll be the breaking of pride of Duryodhana. Does anyone know how Duryodhana's pride got broken, which is described, I believe, in the 75th chapter of the 10th canto, when after the Rajasuya sacrifice, he was walking through the assembly hall of the Pandavas, which was constructed by who? Mayadhanava. Yes? So Mayadhanava doesn't use the same vastu. He uses a asuric vastu. And in the vastu that we use, even, and the Devata type of vastu, in the Brahmastan, in the center of the place of the building, there should never be anything of weight or any water put. So therefore you'll see that in the Brahmastan over here, it's marked off directionally so that there's nothing there practically. Tulsi is there. There's nothing there. But in the assembly house built by Mayadhanava, where a different vastu system was used, there was a body of water that looked like land. And when Duryodhana nicely was walking through, and in these, in the gallery surrounding it, the assembly hall, all the queens of Krishna and Draupadi were there. And when Duryodhana walked through, he fell into the water. And all the queens started and Draupadi started laughing very loudly. And Yudhisthira, seeing the distress of Duryodhana, the embarrassment of a Kshatriya king who had a huge false ego, he used to say, don't laugh, don't laugh, don't laugh. Don't make it worse. And Krishna was going, and he was so angry. Duryodhana was so angry. And because of that anger, it is said that this was the cause of the Battle of Colchester and the insult of Draupadi, which caused so much trouble, and he wanted to get even with Draupadi, embarrass her as he was embarrassed. So Krishna, Vishnu Thraka Bhakti Thakur says, there will be the breaking of the pride of Duryodhana. So this was also another plan of Krishna's that would occur from the killing of Jarasandha and the consequent destruction of the Kuru dynasty would occur during the Battle of Kurukshetra. So all this would result from this one act of killing Jarasandha. This is what Uddhava is saying. No one knows the full results of one act that Krishna desires. Immediately, we think of Prabhupada getting on the Jaladutta. And who could imagine the result that we came from that? And this is, and even Prabhupada was surprised, because only Krishna knows everything. And who knows what the result will ultimately be? I certainly don't. But I do know that Kirtan is very powerful, and the holy land of Vrindavan is very powerful, and the Bhagavatam is powerful, and the association of devotees is powerful. And that the world is truly longing, and each of us also longing for the desert of material consciousness. I'm sorry, I didn't say it right. That the materialistic people are longing ultimately for the desert of their consciousness to be watered and nourished by the waters of spiritual life, of Krishna consciousness. And it is very attractive. We actually have something very important and powerful to offer the world. Even though we may look at ourselves as inconsequential vehicles, we have our part to play. We have our part to play. As Uddhava had his part to play, we have our perhaps little part to play. But who knows the result of our playing our little part properly. And that's what happened, we heard in yesterday's class. Narada said, I can't understand what you want from this, because there you are. I've seen you already as the absolute truth, the personality of God in its 16,000 palaces, all doing different things at the same time. And now we're trying to figure out how you're going to do two things at the same time, be it the register you're sacrificing till Jarasandha. So you have a plan in this, and I don't know what it is. But I do know that I want to surrender to your plan and be part of it, because that's the living entity's constitutional position. Please engage me in your service as you like, in your plan. Now, Sukadeva Goswami says, Savato, Sisuku Vacha, Iti Uddhava Vacha Raja. Uddhava has said this. Savato Bhadramatsuta, that everyone, Devarshi, Yadu Vridascha, both Nara Muni and the elders of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna's cha, Praya Pujayan, everyone praised what Uddhava said, and everyone agreed, because this was Krishna's desire, and Krishna's desire will satisfy everyone. And Uddhava was the instrument of expressing Krishna's desire. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Devarshi Narada, the Yadu elders, and Lord Krishna all welcomed Uddhava's proposal, which was entirely auspicious and infallible. It said, only young princes such as Aniruddha did not like sound his army immediately. Jiva Goswami comments, respecting Uddhava, they praised him, saying, Sadhu, Sadhu, very good. And Narada is mentioned first. He agreed, since his plan would be achieved. Krishna is mentioned at the end, for whatever Uddhava said, he was made to say by Krishna. This was Krishna's proposal also. So immediately, Prabhupada had even told me once that if something is auspicious, does anyone know the rest of the wise advice? Do it immediately. And if it is inauspicious, delay it, put it off. So immediately, Krishna, who was called here the son of Devaki, he begged his superiors, immediately, he begged his superiors permission to leave. Then he ordered his servants, headed by Daruka and Jaitra, to prepare for departure. Jiva Goswami says something that really tells us something attractive about Krishna. Why he did this immediately? Was he so eager to have Jarasandha killed? There's something very funny that we'll hear at the end of this chapter. Jiva Goswami says, out of eagerness to meet the Pandavas, because that was his original question to Narada about the Pandavas, out of his eagerness to meet the Pandavas, he immediately sought permission to leave without even waiting for an auspicious muhurta, an auspicious time for departure. He was so eager. He was eager to see his Pandavas, his devotees, his pure devotees. Why? This will come out later, but we already know why. Because Krishna's Bhakta Vatsala, he loves his devotees. Text 13. O slayer of enemies, Sukadeva is speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, after he had arranged for the departure of his, listen to this, he arranged for the departure of his wives, his children, remember, 16,108 wives, and each, I don't know about this exact time, but there were 10 children for each one. And not only that, the baggage. And taking leave of Lord Shankarshan and King Ugrasena, so taking their permission, Lord Krishna mounted his chariot, which had been brought by his driver. Who was his driver? It flew a flag marked with the emblem of Garuda. The BBT purport says, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Lord Krishna's wives had also been invited to the Rajasuya sacrifice and were eager to go. Jiva Goswami says, he arranged for the going of the inner palace, the entire palaces, his sons, his grandsons, their wives, their daughters, since they could not leave each other. Couldn't take some and not others. For one could think of many reasons why, but Jiva Goswami says they could not leave each other because of the strong affection that they had amongst each other. Because they all loved Krishna. So along with the furnishings, like palanquin servants and the retinue, Krishna took permission from Ugrasena, who was king, to protect the city. He established respect for him by doing this. Please keep your eye on what Krishna does, how he acts. Is this the kind of person that we want to increase our relationship with? Is he the kind of person that we can trust? After the queens and others had departed, he asked permission from Balaram and Ugrasena, since they accompanied him for quite a distance. So they came with him. The hall, huge, 16,000. 16,000 with the children and the baggage and the armies to protect them. And all left broken. As the vibrations resounded from madungas, berries, kettle drums, conches, and gomukas, it filled the sky in all directions. Krishna set out on his journey. He was accompanied by the chief officers of his corps of chariots, elephants, infantry, and cavalry, and surrounded on all sides by his fierce personal guards. Achyuta's faithful wives, along with their children, followed the Lord on golden palanquins carried by powerful men. The queens were adorned with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant oils, and flower garlands. This is how they traveled. And they were surrounded on all sides by soldiers carrying swords and shields in their hands. Because when you're traveling like this, all the queens with their jewelry and golden palanquins, this is going to attract what? Thieves and other armies from other. But how confident Krishna was because of his power. That he paraded from Dwarka all the way across to Hastinapur with this entourage. And they're not going secretly, but with drums and bugles and flags flying. You want to come and take something? You want to fight? Okay, come. And he was in front, not hiding in the back. This is Krishna. You want to fight? You want to give trouble to my queens? You want to give trouble to my children, grandchildren, whatever? You want to take our jewels? Well, come. Let's fight about it. This is Krishna, Kshatriya Krishna in that mood. Would you like to be protected by Krishna? Be in his entourage? Do you think anyone in that entourage was afraid? Oh, that reminds me of something we're soon to hear. On all sides proceeded finely adorned women, attendants of the royal household. So not only with the queens, but the servants and all the baggage again, because after all, none of the queens could be wearing the same sari. Just imagine if they went to a wedding or something like that and they're wearing the same sari. No, everything different, opulent. And one couldn't think Krishna would not allow them. They all thought that Krishna is so attracted to me alone. So they all had to be adorned so wonderfully. So the courtesans were there. They rode on palanquins and camels and bulls and buffaloes and donkeys and mules and bullock carts and elephants. Their conveyances were fully loaded with grass tents, and they had to stop overnight in places. Blankets, clothes, and other items for the trip. And the Lord's army shone brightly in the day with royal umbrellas, chamara fans, and huge flagpoles. Huge flagpoles. Here we are. We are Krishna's army. Their fine weapons and jewelry and helmets and armor surpassed the sun in its brilliance. Thus Lord Krishna's army, noisy with shouts and clatter, appeared like an ocean stirring with agitated waves and timakila fish. So Balaram and Ugrasena came for some time, and then they had to go back and protect the city. And then Narada came with them for some time. But then he was honored by Krishna, who bowed to him. And all of Narada's senses were satisfied by his meeting with Krishna. Thus, having heard the disciples, decision of the Lord and having been worshipped by him, Narada placed Krishna firmly within his heart and departed to the sky. Raja Dutam. Now here is the messenger of the kings, what happened to him. Raja Dutam avachedam Bhagavan Prinayan Gira. He pleased him, Bhagavan Krishna. He pleased the messenger of the kings with his words. The Supreme Lord spoke so sweetly to the messenger of the kings. And what did he say? Ma Maishta. This is one of the only things, or practically speaking, the only verse that Krishna speaks in this entire chapter. Ma Maishta. Don't be afraid. And he doesn't say this in the singular to the messenger. He says it in the plural, so for that message to be delivered to all the kings who were in prison, 20,000 kings imprisoned by Jarasandha. Ma Maishta. And that's what they were taking shelter of Krishna for, because they were frightened, they were afraid. He was torturing them because they were devotees. And because of his own intention to sacrifice them. And then he says, in the final words, he says, Gata Yishyami Margitam, I shall arrange for the killing of Jarasandha Magadha. He didn't say he will do it, because Uddhava had suggested that Bhima do it. But tomorrow we shall hear some of the wonders of that. But before that, let me just see. Yes. With pleasing words, the Lord addressed the messenger sent by the kings. My dear messenger, I wish all good fortune for you. That's a Bhadram Vo. Dutam Bhadram. So he wasn't neglected either. I wish all good fortune for you. I shall arrange for the killing of Magadha, king of Madhava. Do not fear. Thus addressed, the messenger departed and accurately relayed the Lord's message to the kings. And what was the Lord's message? Mabais, don't be afraid. I will arrange for the killing of Jarasandha. Eager for freedom, this is text 20, they then waited expectantly for their meeting with Lord Krishna. Not as simple as that either, because of Krishna in the form of time. But we'll get to that in a moment. So this entourage traveled to the provinces of Anarta, which is Gujarat, Suvirya, Marudesh, Vilasana. Krishna crossed rivers and passed mountains, cities, villages, cow pastures, and quarries, mines. After crossing the river, Vishadviti and Saraswati, he passed the Panchala and Matsya, which is central, more central, what is now India, and finally came to Indraprastha. Jiva Goswami notes that he went through these other provinces from Dwarka to Indraprastha, through Vinasana and Panchala and other provinces that weren't the destination. He visited these places to give happiness to the devotees there and to benefit all living entities, because all living entities could see you. Is this the kind of person you want to have a relationship with? And the only word so far he said in this chapter is Ma Maishta. Don't be afraid. So they arrived in Indraprastha. Now, watch not Krishna, but the mood of the Pandavas, who Krishna was so eager to see because of their love for him. Just watch them. King Yudhisthira was delighted to hear that the Lord associates, the king came out to meet Krishna. As the songs and musical instruments resounded along with the loud vibrations of Vedic hymns, the king, honored by Krishna, went forth to meet Rishikesh. Just as the senses go forth to meet the consciousness of life, it was so natural for him to engage with Krishna, just like it's natural for the senses to interact with our life force. We can't stop it, practically speaking. And Yudhisthira spontaneously ran out to see Krishna. The heart of King Yudhisthira melted with affection when he saw his dear friend Krishna. After such a long separation, he embraced Krishna. He embraced the Lord again and again. Jiva Goswami says that he embraced him again and again. Why? Again and again and again and again. Because every time he stopped, he felt unsatisfied. The eternal form of Krishna is the everlasting residence of the goddess of fortune. As soon as King Yudhisthira embraced him, the king became free of the suffering of separation and immediately felt the highest bliss in the association of Krishna. There were tears in his eyes and his body shook due to ecstasy. He completely forgot that he was living in this material world. He was living with Krishna, in the presence of Krishna. A devotee lives always in the mercy of Krishna. From Jiva Goswami. By Krishna's embrace, all Yudhisthira's suffering from separation vanished, and he attained the highest bliss. The long separation was excellent, since it ended with the highest bliss. Since he was the Lord of men, all his followers, meaning Yudhisthira, also experienced similar feelings. So, separation is excellent when it's separation from Krishna. It is excellent, and this is the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the methodology. Then Bhima, his eyes brimming with tears. Bhima, crying in love for Krishna, yes, melted heart, hard Bhima, who killed the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra and drank the blood as he had promised of Dhritarashtra. How hard one has to be to do this, to fulfill a vow like that. His eyes were brimming with tears. He laughed with joy as he embraced his maternal cousin, Krishna. Arjuna and the twins, Nakul and Sahadev, also joyfully embraced their dear friend, the infallible Lord who does not make a mistake. And then they cried profusely. After Arjuna had braced him once more, and Nakul and Sahadev had offered him their obeisances, first they embraced him out of natural affection, and then, since they were junior, they offered respect. Krishna bowed down to the brahmanas and elders present, thus properly honoring the respectable members of the Kuru, Srinjai, and Kaikai clans. And Sutas, what a festival was coming now. Sutas, Magadhas, Gandharvas, Vandis, Oriyanis, and Brahmanas, they all glorified the lotus-eyed Lord. Some recited prayers, some danced, some sang. Madangas, Kansas, Kail drums, Veenas, Panamas, other drums, and Gomukhas, other drums, resounded. So Krishna's arrival was such a cause of the greatest festival. And everyone who saw Krishna with their lotus eyes, with his lotus eyes, all their suffering ceased and all joy manifested. They surrounded, thus surrounded by his well-wishing relatives and praised on all sides. Krishna, the crest jewel of the just, of the properly justly renowned, he entered the decorated city. So then there's some verses describing the beauty of the city with its golden gateways, and everyone, the men, the young girls, were dressed wonderfully to greet Krishna. So that also gives us a hint that when we greet Krishna in the temple, we should dress properly, not in our best jeans, etc. But we should dress in a proper way, because we're meeting the king in that sense. Every home displayed glowing lamps and respectful offerings. From the halls of the lattice windows drifted incense, which further beautified the city. Banners waved on the roofs were decorated with golden domes on broad silver bases. So Krishna saw the royal city of the Kurus. The young ladies heard that Krishna, who was the most beautiful reservoir of pleasure for their eyes, they saw him. They went on the royal road. They dropped everything, just like the ladies of Mathura and Dwarka and Braj. They dropped everything to see Krishna. The road was crowded with elephants, horses, chariots, foot soldiers. Women climbed to the top. What a festival! What a scene! The city ladies scattered flowers upon the Lord. They embraced him in their minds. They expressed their heartfelt welcome with their smiling glances. And then observing Mukunda's wives passing on the road like stars accompanying the moon, the women exclaimed, "What have these ladies done so that the best of men bestows upon their eyes the joys of his tender smiles and playful sidelong glances?" The women of Hastinapur were speaking like that. So it's such an interesting question. What have these ladies done to be so intimately connected with Krishna? What have the coward boys done to be playing with Krishna? What have the elders done? What have they done? Krita Punja Punja. Not the easiest of things. Piety does it take? What tattvaloyam, what desire, full desire does it take to actually be that level of a devotee? To actually be Krishna Das? In various places, citizens of the city came forward. So indirectly, you know, what have they done? This indirectly glorifies the residents of Vrindavan too. Do you want to be and have a relationship with Krishna in Vrindavan? Of course, everyone, oh, it is. But are we willing to pay the price? Tatra loyam abhimulam ikalam is one price. But it's a very focused price, isn't it? The sinless leaders of occupational guilds came forward to worship the Lord. Everyone had auspicious offerings for him. The royal members, with their eyes wide, just staring at Krishna, came forward quickly with affection to greet Mukunda, and thus the Lord entered the royal palace. Now he's finally in the palace after entering the city after this greeting. When Kunti saw her nephew Krishna, the master of the three worlds, her heart became filled with love. Rising from her couch with her daughter-in-law, Draupadi, she embraced the Lord. Kunti, Jiva Goswami said, had special affection for Krishna, since Krishna was her nephew, and also he was the cause of joy for the three worlds. In expectation of seeing the Lord, she had previously gone to the main palace and sat. then on seeing him, because of intense prema, she was unable to rise from her seat. But somehow she managed to do so, and thus she embraced Krishna. Yudhisthira respectfully brought Govinda, the supreme god of gods, to his personal quarters. So he's being called the Lord of the Three Worlds, the God of Gods, and look how people are relating with him. They're not. The love they have for him dominates their relationship with him, and they're filled with joy, not fear. The king was so overcome with joy that he could not remember how to worship Krishna. The rituals for worshiping Krishna when he entered. He couldn't do it. See, the Goswami comments on Krishna's mood on seeing that Yudhisthira wasn't greeting him in the way that Krishna himself greeted Narada even. He said, this is the second thing that Krishna's going to say. And this is through a comment of Jiva Goswami in the entire chapter. Why are you so confused, running here and there? I am dependent on you. Enough of this attempt to worship me. Just sit comfortably and let me gaze at you for a long time. Krishna is the expert at exacting rasa, sweetness from his relationships, his dealings, his lila prashottam. Encouraged by her mother-in-law, Kunti, Draupadi worshipped all of Krishna's wives, serving those who were serving Krishna, including Rukmini, Satyabhama, Bhadra, Jambavati, Kalindi, Mitravenda, the descendant of Sibi, Vichesnagajiti, and the other queens of Krishna who were also present. Draupadi honored them all. How? With gifts of clothing, flower garlands, and jewelry. King Yudhisthira arranged for Krishna's rest. He traveled so far and saw to it that all that came along with him, namely his queen, soldiers, ministers, and secretaries, were comfortably situated. So many instructions there for her. For us in our dealings too. He arranged that they would experience a new feature of reception every day while staying as guests of the Pandavas. Now, there's a last verse in this chapter, and I'm just going to read a little bit of the Sanskrit of the verse because I found it shocking. Before I shock you. Because I didn't notice this before, when I knew, quote, knew the story the past time. Uvasa katichenma san Ragya Priya Chakirshaya. Just casually stated by Sukadev Goswami that he resided for several months in Hastinapur just to give pleasure, with a desire to give pleasure to Yudhisthira. I read the whole verse. Desiring to please King Yudhisthira, the Lord resided at Indraprastha for several months. And during his stay, he and Arjuna satisfied the fire god by offering him the Kandava forest. They saved Maya Dhanava, who then built King Yudhisthira a celestial assembly hall. The Lord also took the opportunity to go riding in his chariot in the company of Arjuna, surrounded by a retinue of soldiers. Is this Krishna doing what Krishna does with his devotee? Now, what was I shocked by? Raise your hand if you heard it. He stayed there for months. He had told be afraid. I'll kill Jaroslava. I'm Yaga. And he stayed in Hastinapur for several months. Now, if I had good ability, I'd get to that. Yes, I shall find it. Perhaps. With pleasing words, the Lord addressed the messengers. Sent by the king, my dear messenger, I wish all good fortune to you. I shall arrange for the killing of King Magadha. Do not fear. Thus addressed, the messenger departed and accurately relayed the Lord's message to the kings. And eager for freedom, they then waited expectantly for their meeting with Lord Krishna. So what do you think about that? Now, we were just trusting Krishna. He said, and do we really trust Krishna with timing? What was it like for the kings? Well, what would it be like for you? What was it like for the kings? How did they deal with this? Krishna's promise of protection, don't fear, and they were waiting expectantly. Is Krishna coming today? He said he's coming. He's coming today and he will rescue me, us, from this such a difficult circumstance. Captured by Jarasandha, who is threatening to kill us and not feeding us. We can't bathe, we can't eat. Is he coming today to rescue us? The sun sets, and then the next day it rises. Is he coming today to rescue me from this suffering that's so far out of my control? Will he come today as he promised? The sun sets again. And again, and again, and again. I was shocked. I thought it was quite heavy. Did I think it was fair? Well, what if I was in the situation of the king? Again, how would I react? So we're not going to speak in detail about this today, nor tomorrow, nor the next day, or maybe even the next day, but on the final day, something will be revealed. Then in one sense, I can't say it's the purpose of the pastime, but I could say it's a main purpose of the pastime. Okay, let us end now. There's 3 minutes worth of questions. Or maybe we should discuss for 3 minutes. What do you think? Discuss. Small groups of discuss. Go ahead. Only one question. I know you have a question. And send us. And also, I have so many questions. But I think we should discuss. You can ask your questions to the group right now. Go ahead, discuss. Just, but we have only a few minutes. Thank you, Hare.